So definitely that would be a success in terms of complementarity. It's an interesting exercise to give a talk after Gaurav's talk. So let's see if I will be successful, despite I hope you realize that at least I've opened at least one time in my life the volume 3 of quantum mechanics of Landau anyway. But not too much, okay, so probably. Anyway, so I'd like to talk about this topic, which is this long-range ultracold atom dimer photo association. And actually, this is something which could, as you will see, would be replaced within a couple of conversations that have been held already here in the weeks. So before doing that, so I just present all the people who are indeed doing the job. So what I would present mainly relies on the job that Maxence Lepers has done in my group for his postdoc, and Jesus Perez-Rios as well, who just finished his postdoc. And here it's just the whole members of the group, and many of you knows that Gulven just joined our group in last November, and Romain Vecchio is just having a postdoc as well. All right, so the context of the study actually is okay, this is the transparency that we all put, of course, in our presentations. But the thing is that here today, the idea is to go towards something which would be called cold photophysical chemistry. That means the cold chemistry that has been usually accepted, or the ultra-cold chemistry that has been usually accepted up to now, is what it principally has been seen in Gila. That means the fact that those two potassium-beryllium molecules in the ground state actually react. And here the idea would be to add a photon in it for the reason that you will see. Of course, so many things become more complicated, but this is the interest of that, of course. And so they also, the other point also is to make the link maybe a little more obvious, I would say, with physical chemistry and with people, chemists who could be interested with these kind of things, with kind of things that we are doing. And here is just the reminder about the latest reviews that have been done on cold molecules, and the fact that they were actually published in papers in the journals, which are indeed coming from the chemistry community. And so actually, this is some of you may have seen actually some of those questions, because I presented a similar talk in November in Austria. And those words is actually coming from conversation with John Boone. And so this is basically what they present in a few images here, what they present in this paper that we already discussed sometime later, earlier in the week. So the fact that when you have complicated systems, like, you know, for instance, here an atom and a molecule, and if you consider all the channels that can be open or closed at long range, then you have to describe the dynamics, which is by something which then has some long-range interaction and something inside, which is very complicated. And of course, all the question is, what is the influence of this very complicated region? Another way to put the problem, to draw the problem, here it's another drawing coming from that paper, and it is quite off scale, but it tells you that you have many potential curves like that, with many states and so on, and once you enter that region, then you have so many things which are about to be coupled that you cannot treat the things individually. And then with their statistical approach, they manage to draw the kind of signal that you could have in terms of scattering rate, depending on the magnetic field and depending on the temperature of the sample. And then seeing that already at very low temperature, you have so many resonance which will be washed out once you increase the temperature. And so the question is, how can those things could be treated? And to which extent, this is one of the questions of that paper, to which extent their statistical treatment is correct in terms of the basis hypothesis that they do in terms of coupling of all the states in the internal zone. And another part which has been made in their analysis is that they, assuming this kind of things, they realize that due to this all this coupling here in the short range, that the system may actually stay for a long time in the internal zone and can kind of stick in the short range, and may lead, as they say here, to the escape of the molecule from the trap. And so the question is really to know, of course, this is completely open questions that Paul said earlier in the week. These are open questions, but which address really the fact that the complexity, once you start to look at this kind of collision, starting already from atom molecule, which is already a prototype for a chemical reaction. And so here I decided, that was in that last review, the vision of an expert, I call it that way. This is Dave Nesbitt, who is working, you see, in the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry, and who accepted, indeed, to participate to this chemical review issue on coal molecules. And he was giving a couple of statements, typically those things that, from a chemical physics perspective, these diatomic molecules might be considered as relatively arcane objects. Then start too good for us. So he continued by saying that such pair of separated atoms are formed with center of mass velocities corresponding to some microkelvin, and so this basically is stationary in the laboratory. So so I like this formula. It's both extremely elegant and intellectually compelling. So it's always good to know. And although the traumatic chemically interacting species might not seem an obvious fit for a chemical review thematic, issue. Recent advances rapidly emerging field of ultra-cold molecules are now providing a critical change in this way. So this is open. And then later in the paper, he's actually making that statement. The use of weak binding interaction to engineer molecular approach is not a new idea. In the chemical physics literature, this is what has been referred to half collision regime, where the intramolecular potential is used to preorient two reagent species prior to initiating some physical and chemical collision event, and thereby avoiding the more normal sampling of a broad distribution scattering angle and so on. So in other words, instead of doing a collision like this and look at the product, just start from something that you know and look at the outcome products. And if you translate that in terms of what we are used to, this is photoassociation. That means that you have a pair of atoms, you put some you make a photon here, you do something, an excited state, and see, you know that excited state in principle, and see how this thing evolves, and you may then learn something about what is the internal dynamic. So that was the kind of motivation that you can find in trying to look for atom molecule photo association in this context. And so very briefly, so just a cartoon to remind very old stuff, which is now well known by most of us, at least for the point of view of the, let's say, I don't know for the many body physicists, but at least for the few body physicists, this is very well known, of course. So this photo association process, which is just what I told you, which is having an initial pair of particles approaching each other with their radial wave function, choosing the right photon at the right frequency allows to populate some excited states here. And of course, this is a short-lived state and which would decay somewhere and do something else. And so this is something well known. And of course, many molecules have been studied that way, even if they are not chemically relevant, according to what was previously written. But still, many studies have been done. And it was, of course, as you know, a big development in that field. And so now, in terms of cold molecule formation, because that was, of course, the interest, the main point of this kind of process with photo association is to find the right anomaly in the interaction potential, which allow a direct emission down to short-range physics here, which is characterizing the interaction between two particles, while the excitation is characterized by long-range physics. And so these are the typical two schemes that we are used to show, which is either you have an anomaly in the potential well, or you have some intermediate non-adiabatic couplings which may help to populate short-range states in the ground state. So now,
sorry, those schemes are a little fast for me. So as someone who's fairly ignorant of this area, can you just more slowly explain them if you go back?
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I just didn't have time to take in
those plots. Okay, those things. So this is just the same that I've shown before. You have one ground state potential, one excited state potential, right? Okay. And so again, this radial wave function for the collision process, right? So you assume that you excite some excited wave function upstairs, right? And so the idea is that typically you do that at long range because everything is spending at long range. But the point is, how can you bring the probability density to the short range in order to have a direct emission, whatever is the emission, if it's spontaneous or stimulated, you don't care, but you want to have, of course, some probability to emit directly a photon to the short-range domain, where you have indeed your short-range physics, which is characterizing the ground state particle, right?
Yeah.
So to do that, you know, if you would have a normal potential like the previous one, I'm sorry, because anyway, yeah. Here, the density probability is extremely small, so the chance to go there is small. So most of the time, you will actually have two atoms escaping from the craft, going back to the continuum. Okay? And so the idea of those schemes is that if you have some kind of anomaly like this in the potential, it means that suddenly you have a peak in the density probability, the probability density, I'm sorry. And then you have a direct emission downstairs.
So in a way, you
have the possibility to bring, in a classical picture, you have the possibility to bring the flux of particle from here to here, the probability density from here to here, okay? Otherwise, you don't. And so this kind of feature allow to do that. And if you have a non-adiabatic coupling, that means a coupling between two electronic states here, which is almost invisible on that scale. I'm sorry for that, because it's extremely compressed. But when you have this kind of things, you obtain the same kind of things here, some increase of the probability density, which again allow you to go downstairs. Okay. So this is the idea for the perspective of the cold molecule formation process. And actually, that was the first experiments on the cold molecule formations were actually realized through these processes before going to the magneto association, or almost simultaneously, if you like. Well, actually, it was the first, just before magneto association. And of course, when you create those cold molecules, you do them in a much less controlled way than by using Feshbach association. Okay, because here, assume that you are relying on spontaneous emission, that you create a whole spectrum of molecules. But at least you have them in a fair number. So it's a question of compromise, okay, what you want to do afterwards. So then now, let's go now, because that was now two atoms. Let's go now to see what can we do if you have now an atom and a molecule. And here again, it was coming from a conversation with John Bone. And so, in a way, the question is that is it promising first? And actually, there are many experiments that most of you know, where people have indeed seen some signal, some conditional signal between atom and molecule, which means that the densities of molecules is not so bad because it allows those kind of effects to be observed. And so then, why not having such samples, trying to shine a photon on it, and trying to indeed create some trimer? So what I mean is, experimentally, it seems feasible, as long as, of course, somebody wants to do it. And so the way to describe it, so this is what we decided to do, of course, in this case, because what the dynamics of short distance is extremely complicated. As you know, you have three atoms, so that would be a very complicated surface. So let's try to consider that in any case, as you have particles which are at large distances, so we have molecules, we have atoms, so let's treat the long-range interaction between the two and see what happens. Okay, so let's start by that thing. And so here, this is just usual things, of course, that are probably written in the Landau Lipschitz book. I don't remember which volume, I have to say. Maybe volume three, maybe, yes.
We're talking about short-range molecules here, not Feshbach molecules, right?
Right now, I'm talking about a molecule which is in its ground state. Right. So I have two objects, right? Two objects. One is an atom, another one is composite, basically in its ground state. Yes. Okay? So in terms of distance, the equilibrium distance is really negligible compared to the distance between the atom and the molecule, of course. All right?
By the way,
that means
helium doesn't have, for example,
quadrupole
electric dipole
moment,
right? So
this is excited.
But still, even excited state, right?
Yeah, sure. This is the point. This is the main difference compared to ground state species, of course.
Okay.
I mean, this is why that case is a little bit different, all right? In that, simply because you have one about R5. So typically, this is the formalism that you all know, I mean, which is then the multipolar expansion with all the multipolar moments and all kind of factors. And here, typically, what I said is that you have cesium 2 in its ground state. And the cesium, so I took cesium just because that was the kind of thing that we had at home in the experiment. So it could have been, of course, whatever alkalized, but we started by that case. And then I take the cesium in its excited state because I'm doing photoassociation and I want to look at how looks the interaction, the long-range interaction between an atom and a molecule. Then, so because I have here, I don't have a angular momentum on the molecule here, so this is just the rotation, the mutual rotation, and this is the J for the atom. And then, of course, there is one quantum number which is conserved, which is just a projection of this total angular momentum on the intermolecular axis. Okay? This is the rotation of the molecule here, this guy, right? Okay, so I'm in the molecular frame, and I'm looking at the interaction, the mutual interaction between the two particle, atom, and molecule.
So your L is, what would your capital L have been? The one you crossed out?
No, this one would have been this guy.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Which is zero. All right.
Okay.
So I'm just keeping this.
It's not the end of Rand rotation of the complex.
Yeah. It's electronic calculation, and it's.
It's not. It's not that. It's not the.
No, absolutely not.
Not
yeah, absolutely.
The two things
no, I'm doing it in the molecular frame. I'm not doing it in the lab frame
okay.
right now. Okay. So I'm really looking at the interaction potential, right? Okay. So this is in a way very 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 standard. And so the dominant terms, at the zeroth order, this is just, of course, the sum of energy, and this is what you are saying. At the first order, you have the quadrupole moment of the atom because it is excited in the 5p state, in the p state, right? And you have the quadrupole moment of the molecule. Okay, it means that the first term will be 1 over R5, and then, of course, at the second order of perturbation, you have 1 over R6, as usual. And so, of course, to calculate those things, then you need to know, in particular, to get the C6. So this is just in passing, but I will not come back to that. But you need to know, of course, all kind of data on molecules. That means potential energy surface, transition dipole moment, and so on, that we have calculated to be indeed able to calculate those kind of terms. And so we know that this is necessary. And so at the end, if you look at every single rotation of the molecule, and for L equal 1 for the atom, then you have this number of long-range potential curves that you have to design, and with the formula which is here. So this is here the rotational constant of the molecule, and this is then the interactions. Okay, and so the kind of results that you obtain is the following. So it's very standard calculation. These are just the numbers which are different. So here, this is the case for the ground state molecule with the ground state atom, just to have a reminder. So the we are used to call those states with molecular symmetries, which relies to the projection of this total angular momentum, as I told you. So this is really, it's not the internal state of the molecule, but it is just the projection of the angular momentum, the sum of the angular momentum rotation of this one and of the cesium here. And then this is kind of C6 that you observe. And so those values were calculated by other people as well. But it's just to tell you that in terms of atomic units, the kind of numbers that you obtain, which are basically two times the one that you have for cesium-cesium interaction. Essentially the order of magnitude. So what I'm saying is just that we know that it is same kind of interaction. And so now, if you turn to the cesium molecule with the cesium excited atom, so for different states of the molecule molecule here, so I suspect that there is here the small j here. Okay, this is this one because I changed. I put n and now j. So I'm sorry for this confusion here. Okay, so this is really the rotation of the molecule now. Okay, so I didn't notice that mistake before. So for different rotational state of the molecule, so this is the kind of coefficient that you obtain. Again, it's just to get an idea about how strong they are.
Have you taken out the spin of the atom here?
For the moment, it's just a p state.
Right, okay.
Okay, just for simplicity. Then you can put it afterwards, so that this I will show later. But for the moment, it's just a p state, and so it's really the simplest level of the theory, right? And so when you do this, you see the kind of coefficient that you obtain. So the C6 are significantly larger than here, okay, as could be expected because the thing is more polarizable. And these are the kind of C5 coefficient, which are quite big. And you see, the point is to see that they are, depending on the quantum numbers, they are either negative or positive or zero, depending on the cancellation rules that could happen and so on. So the situation is extremely varied. So it's just showing the thing. And so this is the kind of curve that you obtain then. So here, so at large distances, you have one molecule and an atom which are separated. So here you get back the rotational structure of the rotational energy level, the rotational energy level of the molecule. And then you have the attraction which takes place. And depending, again, on the symmetry, like here or there, you have different landscape.
Are those edge events, or are they just diagonal terms?
Yeah, these are just the diagonal terms here for the moment. And of course, you see that the validity, limit of validity of this system is, of, as we already said later in the week as well, is that when the rotational energy becomes on the same order of magnitude that the attraction. Because then, of course, all those curves cross each other. And then it means that now you have to turn. As I said, it comes at about 100 atomic units, and then they got the same magnitude, so you have to go to the small order degenerate perturbation theory, that means diagonalizing the whole subspace in order to get these kind of curves. So here, the initial diagonal terms were crossing here in dashed lines, and then you see how you get voltage crossings once you are at shorter distances here, and so you may have all kind of complicated dynamic going on here when you go. So we are still talking about very small energy, as you see here. This is a fraction of a wave number. The distance are already quite small compared to, I would say, the range of the, say, dipole-dipole interaction or the kind of numbers that we already discussed previously. And here, but still, you know, you have this kind of then possible interaction between channels and so on. That means, so it's a starting of vision of what was contained in John Bond's paper and collaborators, the fact that you very soon already you start to have coupling between rotational states of the molecules. And this is, of course, well known due to the presence of the perturbation, which is the atom. So you see all kind of things like that. Then you can add a spin orbit in that. So here, this is the kind of landscape that you get for the cesium in the H3 halves, in both cases, and depending on the projection then of the angular momentum. So you see, and then you have parity rules depending here on the various symmetries, and you have those funny things which may happen here, which are those kind of erratic crossings, stronger erratic crossings and so on, which may, of course, influence the dynamics or the presence of the barriers and so on, depending on the initial state of the molecule that you are indeed trying to associate with the atom. So the purpose of all of that is to say that, the first of all, there are many states. Second, that the dynamics could be quite complicated already, even at large distances. And so, of course, the question is, how can we find our way in such a...
Just a comment there, which is that the quadrupole has disappeared on the left-hand side, and therefore everything's now C6 dominated.
You mean here?
Yeah.
I think so, yes. So there could be some of those could have the C5 equal to zero, as I said.
They've all got to have C5 equal to zero because one quadrupole in an amigurumi was a half state.
Yeah, right, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sorry, hang on, this is a J equals a half. No, these are both J equals 3 halves, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I see, okay. No, you haven't got the J equals 1/2.
Yeah. No, I see, not here. No, only 3 halves here.
Right.
Okay. No, okay, for the one, okay, I see your point.
Okay, no, I see.
So there may be some of those who are indeed completely flat, but the others are still quite attractive. So still mixed, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so then, once you have that, you can play some things, because you can, for instance, try to look what happened for a molecule like lithium-2 with lithium excited, because lithium has a very small spin orbit constant. So in a way, you know, this very small spin orbit constant is not, I mean, the idea was to look for a system where the spin orbit constant is, let's say, competing with the rotational energy of the molecule, because then you would induce even more complicated dynamics. So if you think about lithium, who has a very small spin orbit constant here, then you see now that you have ici the rotation which dominates really the spin orbit here. And so this is the kind of funny dynamics that you obtain.
So the spin orbit coupling with lithium? It's actually small on this.
It is 0.2 wave number. Yes, I think about 0.2, 0.17, I don't remember.
So that's the splitting you can see on the right.
This is this one here, right? Okay. And so this is the rotational constant of the molecule. So here, then the hierarchy is completely inverted compared to the cesium, of course. And the funny thing is this one, is that now, I mean, for somebody who would be crazy enough to try this kind of thing, that means you have potassium two molecule, and then the cesium excited. And now you have indeed a competition on that scale between the spin orbit of the lithium and the rotational constant of the potassium. And then you see that you have a really complicated dynamics here, just because, of course, those two numbers compete each other, and then with a lot of value crossings and so on. So it would be fun to have a look one day to these kind of things, or not. And so now the last part, of course, is just to try to evaluate what kind of rates would you obtain in such a picture for the photo association. So now the idea is to say, let's assume that everything starts at large distances. Let's assume that we are able to excite vibrational state of the complex, which are looking like a molecule and an atom like this, at least in a kind of transient way. And so let's assume that indeed those states exist to some extent. And so let's assume that now you connect all those long-range potential to some kind of arbitrary deep short-range potential that you don't care. But it could be even the same for all of them. You don't care because we don't want to describe the dynamics in details because we just don't have the possibility to do it. So just for the purpose of doing the calculation, you take a deep potential inside so that you assume that the probability density in the short range is just negligible, and then everything is working at large distances. So this is just reproducing what you are used to do for the photo association of two atoms. So let's treat that problem just like two atoms, okay? And so this is what I just say here. And so then you do the usual calculations. You have the usual form for the photo association rate, which implies to have the overlap between this effective bound wave function for the excited state, the initial collisional wave function, some other terms which are related, of course, to the temperature, the density, and everything. All right? And so for the purpose of the comparison, because the idea would be to say to see if this process could be efficient compared to what is known in atom-atom photo association. And so then we, in order to compare to other experiments, then we divide this rate by the flux of photon which is coming and by the density, okay, for the purpose, as you will see, of comparison. And then what you obtain is this kind of things. So this I call then this normalized photo association rates, which are expressed here in this strange unity, which is centimeter to the 5. And so this is what you obtain for two different temperature here. So this is very small detuning, as you can see, compared to, so here this is, I forgot to say, this is photo association. I'm sorry, this is not the way I wanted to go. So for instance, we look at photo association below that lowest threshold, all right? So those levels which would be just below the n equals 0, okay? We could do, of course, we could look at resonances and so on, but I would not have time to show that. So when you do that, then you see that you have, as we know, depending on this overlap, you have a maximum and minima in the photo association rate, depending on the overlap between the two wave function. And here is just the influence of the temperature. And if you go to smaller temperature, then you, of course, you will increase in this perturbative approach, you will increase the rate here.
Sorry, Olivier, can I just be clear? You're just below the WP 1/2 threshold, is that right? The curves that are important are the WP 3/2.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, so in that particular case, I think this is 3/2. I have to check. But on the other hand, I mean, if it is cesium, you don't care so much because the P1RAF and P3RAF are so far away that, of course, you in principle, inside, of course, you will have even more.
I'm worried about decay of the molecules to make the P1RAF atom. So, you know, photo association, if you want them actually to be bound states, they're going to have to be below the P1RAF threshold. Because there could well be a fairly fast
predissociation
to...
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, all right, okay. Okay, I would say that qualitatively, it would not change too many things.
But it will, because at the P1/2 threshold, you don't have the quadrupole terms.
Right, so this is P3/2, then. Okay, I agree with you, okay, fine. So, okay.
Indeed.
So, so definitely this is the P3/2. And so this is the rate that for which we have calculated it. So this I have to check if we have the number for the P1/2. I have to check. I'm not sure that we have them.
Well, the other thing, of course, is that as soon as it's a heteronuclear diatomic, you're going to have alpha minus four terms in there, which may bring back quite a lot of the effects you've got for the 300.
So as I will say, I mean, the heterologous things we'll do afterwards. For the moment, it was really a model calculation for the cesium-2, just to see some numbers. But of course, we have still a number calculation which are going on for the heteronuclear case, because of course you have to modify, of course, the long range expressions and so on. So at the end, so the idea, so those numbers are not very meaningful, generally speaking. But if you put them on that scale, which is the photo association rate expressed in the same unit, and you take various experimental investigations, that is those for lithium in a BEC, for sodium potassium in a BEC. Those maybe this comes from the Randy Ulez group. This comes from the Nils group of Paulette. And here, this comes from our group here in Orsay. The rubidium cesium comes from this one, I think, comes from the Nils group, I think. And then these are our calculations here for the cesium-2. So depending on the temperature, or in a temperature which would be equivalent to a BEC. And given the kind of numbers that I gave before, actually, you realize that if you are in things like MOT conditions, like here, you are in the range of the previous experiments, which have been done under MOT conditions. And here, of course, as I said, if you go to the condition of a BEC, that means much lower temperature, once again, in this perturbative approach, then, of course, the rates become quite large. So in that sense, so there is, in some sense, there is no real surprise. By the way, you see here that the rate for the rubidium cesium on that scale is quite smaller because this is, as we said, a heteronuclear system in that particular case. So in that sense, there is not too much surprise in the sense that, as you know, of course, that we describe the photo association between an atom and a molecule as a two-body process, then the interactions between the two are similar to those of the atom-atom interaction. And to some extent, this coupling between all the states and this complicated dynamics that you see in the potential curves don't play such a big role in this particular case, especially because we are at very small detuning, at least here, we are at very small detuning. And so those couplings are not so strong right now, at least for this particular case of cesium. Okay? And so so now the question here, so the, now the scenario, if now I kind of go back to my introduction. So the idea, of course, to perform such a photo association experiment would be then to select, if it exists, a particular level in the entrance channel. Of course, this level, so assume, now this is the question to be asked now to the experimentalist, somebody who wants to do the experiment. If somebody has a sample with atoms and with enough molecules, so the idea would be to try to do such a photo association. And so, of course, the challenge is, will you see something or not? If something is seen, it could be either a resonance signal or the formation of trimers, which could be detected as a loss or whatever, then it means something about what happens in the short range, in a sense that if we can indeed able to select such a level in the entrance channel, in the photo association channel, this level, of course, is probably coupled to many resonance in the inner zone. And now there are two things. Either those, it is so coupled in the inner zone that actually there is no real level existing that you can reach, because then they will be so broad that you will never reach them because the coupling is so strong in the inner zone. Or on the contrary, if the coupling between the let's say this long range state and the short range resonance are selective enough, then you may be able indeed to select individual resonances, hopefully according to the model that we described, and then you would be able to maybe model a little bit more precisely this, not only the photo association, but hopefully also the formation of core molecules. Because if something, let's say, more selective happens in the inner zone, then like a single level existing, something, then you could then have a stabilization in bound level of cesium 3. On the other hand, those models, those statistical models were also saying that due to the enormous possibilities to couple, one level with all those resonances, it means that the system stays quite long in this region. And so if it's the case indeed, then you would have all time to decay, spontaneously decay to the ground state. So the question of how would we detect this photo association, if it exists, it will probably, if we can, are able to see a resonant process. So at a very specific distance, if we see something which is resonant, it means that the coupling is not strong. If we see the formation of some trimer formation at some point, it could mean either that we are able to select a given level, or just to the fact that we do something, the system stays sticked together long enough to indeed decay and create core molecules. So in that sense, it is still an open question, but it is just a suggestion to say that the photo association could be a way to investigate the short-range dynamics, just because, as I said, instead of starting from a collisional state and to look for what is going out, then you hope to start from a well-defined bound state, hopefully well-defined. If it is indeed, then you can say something about what happens in the short-range distance. So this is the idea. So there are two, apparently we discuss this possibility for an experiment with two people, because Bistole is actually trying to do it, but in the heteronuclear case with, I think, potassium and rubidium 2, if I remember correctly, or he's the kind of guy who would like to do all combination or possible combination actually. But what I mean is that he knows how to create potassium rubidium molecules quite efficiently by photo association. So by the way, those molecules would be in the triplet state. So the idea now is, of course, to look at this long-range interaction between a triplet molecule and an excited atom. So that we have done also. So that changes the numbers, of course. And so the other possibility in terms of cesium-3 is to try to look in some kind of quantum degenerate regime, which is like those experiments which are done in Innsbruck, where they are indeed able to have their bunch of molecule, ground state molecule, which are trapped in an optical lattice. And if they are able by some way to approach some kind of dense phase of atoms around here, then at the same place, then you could expect, because you would have both in the same places cesium 2 molecule and cesium atoms with a fair density, then you may hope to be able indeed to shine a photon and to see this kind of photo association. And I guess that it goes back to your talk of yesterday. The question is, how will you manage indeed experimentally to have both in the same site, not two atoms, but one molecule and an atom and so on. And so I would, in some sense, it goes beyond my knowledge, but it's not just a question to say, oh, just take a lattice and just take a super fluid phase of cesium and put them together. I suspect it's a bit more complicated. And but that could be, in terms of density, of course, a nice way to try to look at those things. And I think that actually in his work, they are kind of trying to do also, to see if they can see something to some extent. And so this is contained in my green sentence. And so this is the end, right? So I don't know if it will be possible to do that this afternoon, but anyway, thank you for your attention. Yes.
Just going back to the beginning, the interaction between a p-state atom and a diatomic molecule that's not linear. You calculate three potential energy surfaces, 2a prime and 1a double prime.
No, what I'm saying is that I calculate the interaction between one atom and a rotating molecule. So it's not.
You don't actually calculate the three two-dimensional potential energy.
Absolutely services. No. The idea is really to rely on the fact that you have two composite objects in some sense, and you look at the interaction between the two. Because as long as they are far from each other, you should not. My opinion is that you should not look at a system which is like in fixed geometry. But you have something which is rotating.
No, I understand that, but I must admit I would tend to think of them as moving on those surfaces because you could have things like conical intersections between the surfaces that might produce interesting effects. But okay, no,
at large distances,
you can do that at least as far as the long range. Forces are concerned.
Yeah, I think so. Actually, we have done that. We have done this kind of calculation for ozone.
So you've got some matrix elements. Oh gosh, I would think of them as matrix elements that couple the A prime and A double prime surfaces in the pi state, in the electronic pi state. And those are things that would be off diagonal in your final omega quantum number. So is your omega conserved, or do you actually have those terms in the Hamiltonian?
This omega is just a projection of the rotation of the molecule on one side and the atom on the other side. So this one is conserved, right? Okay. But once you will put the rotation between the two.
It's not a purely electronic omega.
Yeah.
It's an omega that's made up.
In a way, as long as you consider that you have a two particle system. Okay, it's
so
a quasi-electronic.
It's a quantum number that we would have called P, I think. So back in the days when we were doing HCL and things like that.
Actually, you could...
HCL is a bit similar to this.
So I said omega, it's just... because at some point the idea was to make a difference between, the sigma of the molecule, and this is only this.
Sure. I just kind of think you need an electronic quantum number as well as the one you're talking about. For some of the states.
But in that sense, it is a quasi-electronic quantum number in the sense that it is two particles in which.
It's not quasi-electronic. It's got a mechanical rotational. Purely electronic, you call it omega, and when it's got a mechanical part.
I tell you. What I'm saying by that is the following, is the fact that I consider, actually this is just an example of the general case of having the long range interaction between two open shell systems. That means you have two charge distributions with a given angular momentum.
But you've got a contribution from the rotation, mechanical rotation of the cesium dimer contributing to this thing.
Yeah.
And therefore it's
But it's formally it's equivalent.
It's a rotational electronic quantum number, not a purely electronic one.
I agree. But what I mean is formally, it's just a non-zero angular momentum on one side, a non-zero angular momentum on the other side.
I agree. Yeah, no,
so it's
I
just formally
the same. Just okay. Talking about the spectroscopic convention of what this is called.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you thought yet about calculating the quantized bound states and long-range potentials, or making estimates of density of states?
Actually, that was there. They were there. Here.
That's what you've done. Okay.
This is just like
a two-coordinate.
Yeah. Okay. So these are the bound states that we find in that particular. So this is the density of bound states that we have, of course, given those C5 and C6 value that we get. All right, so it gives, of course, there are many of those.
In some adiabat or just in the diode?
No, this is the couple.
It's a full couple calculus.
Okay. So in this particular case, probably we restrict ourselves to the first three or four thresholds, because at some point, we wanted to have really things which are close to the lower threshold. And second, we looked at the couplings And we have seen that as long as you are concerned by the long range states like this, the couplings with the higher rotational state is not significant. So it is significant for the, let's say, typically three consecutive channels. But this is the full couple.
And you assume some kind of phase quantum defect boundary condition for the short range?
Just because we take a single potential, okay. So you work quite a lot to make the connection as usual. I mean, correct in a range where you don't want to discuss any physics, like usual, and we take basically the same potential, which is the shifted to match all the long-range potential. So in that sense, it's just an artificial phase shift inside. Just because, I mean, for the moment, they're just not possible to do anything else, right? So otherwise we would have solved, I mean, in a way, this is what John and his colleagues have done to some extent. They modeled, for the ground state at least, they modeled the density of states for the real trimer, and so they obtain enormous numbers, of course. And so I think this is exactly the point. I mean, the fact that, of course, from the long-range physics, we know what is the density of states of the levels, and the question is if it will be visible or not.
Christiana,
I'm sorry. You should have seated here.
It's too cold.
Yeah, you could close the window. Anyway.
It's a related question for Paul. So here you're looking at one state. Do you think that in the experiment they actually see photo association resonances because the density of states is so high that there may be many overlapping?
This is once again here. Here, the idea is, if you know, this is photo association below the lowest threshold. So in principle, you don't have many states. Of course, if you go to the lowest threshold, which means zero angular momentum for the molecule, basically, all right? And the P atom. So it means that it is the lowest one, yeah. All right? So if you go above...
Sure, but even for the lowest one, if you're a photo association at 100 core, there's just this one state, but if you go to 30 or 40 more,
yeah,
then already you have these crossings.
Yeah, you see here we are let's say at what one wave number corresponds to something like would be 50 bores or something typically. So you have these things, and you see this is the density on state. So we have all these crossings. So it looks like at
these crossings already. In
yeah, absolutely. This is the fully coupled situation. But the question is that it's not clear yet again. So at the long range, the couplings between those states seems to be, let's say, small enough in the long range. The question is what happened in the short range? Because then, of course, if those points become like blob like this, of course, you will not see anything anymore. So this is the whole question. But this is already taking into account the long range couplings. Yes.
I'll just follow up a comment on what you said in Christiana's question. If you put in the short range states a la John Bone with this kind of statistical theory, essentially you'll get an enormously dense set of short range states that these couple to. And effectively, I think from the standpoint of the way you might look at that, will these like pre associated with the short range, or will they couple into the short range and effectively broaden out? So an interesting question whether someone could do an experiment, and they could immediately tell you whether these things, if you could do an experiment, you could see whether anything sharp popped out, or that just a white spectrum, just no structure.
That's the point. So the idea, as I said, I mean, there are two people with whom we have discussed, with Bill Stolle, who wants to try it with rubidium-2 and potassium, whatever the combination. And so I think that they are trying to do something with the cesium-2 experiment in Innsbruck, cesium-2 plus cesium. So hopefully there will be an answer, but I heard that they are indeed trying to look for something in the laboratory.
So Schroeder gave a very detailed talk that I think everybody could follow step by step. You've given a very high level talk. It would be nice if, maybe on Friday.
Some of us on the molecular side would have pushed it the other way around. But Olivier's given a low level talk and Jory gave a high level one.
Well, let me finish my comment.
Yeah, yeah, please.
I need something specific by this.
Please, please.
So, what you didn't explain is exactly how you technically, for example, obtain that rate, you know, and how you factor temperature into the actual calculation that you do. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned some numerics on the fly and. But maybe this can be for Friday because it's too.
This is everything contained here.
That's all there is? Okay, I thought there was more to it than that.
No, I mean...
So it's just E minus delta over KBT, it's just a support...
Absolutely, this is a perturbative model.
Okay.
And the whole work is not so much in putting into the temperature in this particular kind of calculations. The whole problem is to define the wave functions. I mean, our main purpose is to get the wave functions. To get the wave functions, you need the potentials and so on and so on. So this is the whole thing. And so not only this, but to get the potential, I mean the C6, the C5, and then all the molecular data which is behind and so on. So in that sense, this is, if you like, this is what is, when you, in some sense, you could summarize in that way. When let's say, the many-body physics, just like Jorah said, you plug somewhere the scattering length, the point is that what we are trying to do is to compute the scattering length. Of course, we don't compute it because we know that from the theory, from the symmetric calculation, you cannot get it because you don't have good enough accuracy. But in some sense, you know, instead of having one parameter plugged into the model to get your interaction, what we are doing is to compute indeed this interaction to get the collisional picture. So in terms of technical techniques, if you like, used, where we put the focus is on this, right? So.
Yeah. Yep, very clear, thank you.
But I'm of course open to go back to that on Friday, of course.
Okay,
if necessary.
Any more questions for Olivia? No? Well, let's thank Olivia and Jota for great talks today.